Welcome to White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000. A behind-the-scenes look at the White Sox as they prepare for the 2021 baseball season. Brought to you by Wintrust Bank, Mazda of Orland Park, on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's new home of the White Sox.
Good morning and welcome into White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000. I'm Connor McKnight, got you for the next hour, and I have great news. For White Sox fans, for baseball fans everywhere, pitchers and catchers have reported. Soon, spring training will be fully underway. We're just a few days away from full squad workouts and even just a couple more days away from our very first broadcast for the White Sox here on ESPN 1000, February 28th versus the Brewers. Len and DJ will have that game live on these very airwaves. God, it's going to be fantastic to have baseball on the station. It is awesome to have a team with aspirations of winning a World Series a part of our broadcasts here. Spring training is getting underway, and the White Sox have tons of questions, all sorts of different lineup constructions, new coaches, new relationships, new starts to form here in spring of 2021. And quite frankly, I think just a brief minute, like if you're a White Sox fan, or really a fan of any team, just kind of tuning in and anything, I think taking a minute to think about, you know, just where the sports landscape is right now and what it's going to take for all 30 teams in Major League Baseball, all the assorted travel party that goes with it, the broadcasters, the beat reporters, the families of players and front office folk, of clubbies and of coaches and managers and training staffs. I mean, this is going to be a tremendous undertaking for at least the next couple of months. And it's going to be hard. It's going to take yet another adherence to COVID disciplines and understanding that the health and safety of everyone in the bubble and outside of it is incredibly important. And I know that baseball is doing the best they can while still playing baseball to make sure that they're undergoing safety protocols. But it is pretty remarkable that after just a 60-game season last year, that the whole of baseball, really most of it, has gotten itself together to take a run at a full 162, and I couldn't be more excited. I know White Sox fans feel very much the same way, more excited about the potential for the 2021 White Sox. We've been talking about it for the last month and a half here on White Sox Weekly. Obviously, this is a team laden with talent, some top-tier talent that should make a run at the AL Central and could make a deep playoff run, too. Nothing's promised to anyone, of course, but Rick Hahn, in his spring training opening press conference, put it pretty frankly, basically to start the press conference. At the very beginning, there were a couple of injury updates, which we'll get to, some minor stuff, but it sounds like Jace Fry, the reliever, is not going to be ready to start the beginning of the season. Sounds like he could be ready to go shortly thereafter, but not ready to start. After the injury stuff was done, Rick Hahn gave really the quote of the press conference and set the stage for what should be a really entertaining 2021. Have a listen.
You know, as we sit here today, Bruce, the goal is to win a World Series championship. And so if we fall short of that, it would be a disappointment. Now, look, we're obviously living in a unique world right now. And if we were to fall short of that goal, we'd certainly want to look back and try to figure out why. What factors influenced us falling short. But as of all days, especially on the first day of camp, not to mention what we've all been through for the last, you know, several years preparing to get to this point, I think having championship aspirations is to be expected and to a man what people want.
Now, obviously, I'm not Bruce. I'm Connor. But he was talking to everybody when he said it. Let me clean things up. Play it for you one more time. Let you hear what the GM of the White Sox expects of his team for this season.
The goal is to win a World Series championship. And so if we fall short of that, it would be a disappointment.
it should not be taken lightly or brushed over that the general manager of the White Sox has put those expectations out there, as his pitchers and catchers have reported. Take joy in that, I think. Hold on to this for a brief moment. It's cold in Chicago. There is snow everywhere. Your car is probably still under 5 feet of snow. But let this, White Sox fans, warm your heart for just a minute. Do you know how many GMs in baseball get to legitimately say out loud and to the public that our expectations are to win a World Series championship, and if we don't get there, we will be disappointed? Not many. Not many of them. Handful every single year. And yeah, there are some areas the White Sox could probably shore up just a little bit. And sure, injuries could stop you here. And what if development doesn't come around on this side of things? But as we sit here now, as White Sox fans and everyone here at ESPN 1000, everybody around the country who covers the sport looks at the White Sox. This is a team that should make the playoffs. This is a team that has declared its intentions. And this is a team that's poised to get even better than it was in 2021 with some pretty realistic growth attached to it. Nobody's hoping for outlandish things one way or another. It's got a rotation of Giolito and Lynn and Keuchel, 1-2-3. It's got a handful of arms beneath that trio that have a potential to grow into something that's much more than just a guy in the rotation. It's got an offense that can click. It's got a cornerstone-type piece in Yoan Moncada that's beginning to feel healthy again, that is recording music videos again. We'll play a little bit of that later. This is great stuff. This is absolutely great stuff. And the start of a spring training that White Sox fans can feel really good about. I certainly do. It should be a lot of fun to cover this team. There are a handful of newsy items from Rick Hahn's press conference and from the interview he did with Waddle and Sylvie on Thursday, I believe it was. We'll bring you some of that in the next segment because I think it's important to hear how the guys at this station kind of spoke with Rick and kind of talked about the issues at hand in the season. Coming up a little bit later here in White Sox Weekly, around 9:30, we're going to talk with The Athletic White Sox beat reporter James Feegan. James is athletic. He writes for The Athletic, though. That's where the name comes from. We're going to sit down and talk a little bit about Yasmani Grandal. We're going to talk a little bit about what this spring training may look like in terms of potentially adding a player or two should things get weird in the free agent marketplace. And we're going to talk about some of the things that the White Sox could do to perhaps shore up or protect themselves from the unexpected. All of that's for a little later in the show, though, because I want to focus on the expectations here. I want to focus on where the White Sox have set their sights, mostly because it's where the White Sox have set their sights. Going back to Rick Hahn saying that the expectation is to win a World Series or that this season will be a bit of a disappointment, Tony La Russa was asked pretty much the very same question, really phrased slightly differently on Thursday during his Thursday media session. It was more so poised to him as your GM has talked about this. Multiple players in Lucas Giolito and Tim Anderson and the like have been asked about this. Nobody's hiding from the expectations here. What is your reaction to that? What is your message to the team given that?
I think you have to confront the reality that we have a real chance. And if you try to sidestep it, what happens? You know, you don't get serious about all the work that has to be done. It may surprise you at some point that the pressure is there. So I think it's really important that we recognize that we have a chance to be really good. But it's equally as important, and I don't take this to disrespect how good we can be, but you look around, there are other really good teams out there. And the pressure is going to be for us to be as good as we can be, because when you play and you want to get it to October and then beyond, get ready for a lot of tough competition. So, number one, I think you got to recognize it, embrace it, but you also got to be realistic about all the work ahead.
And there definitely is work to be done. You know, we talked last week and the week before about the moves the Twins have made to keep pace, or maybe even given some projection systems overtake the White Sox in terms of, you know, how those systems see the AL Central playing out. Adding Nelson Cruz is a big deal. Re-adding him, really, if we're going to be straight about it. Angelton Simmons, Josh Donaldson in a full season. Those are all formidable pieces. I wouldn't rule the Twins out from being one of the teams that potentially in a few weeks here looks at a free agent marketplace that maybe has seen a guy or two that, you know, a team might take a flyer on, or even a level or rank or two above that, and go, hey, let's open up the purse strings again. Let's see if there isn't a reunion maybe with Jake Odorizzi who could work. Or perhaps there's another starter out there that could fill things out for us. I think the Twins are the kind of team where, just like the White Sox, every marginal win matters. I think there's going to still be, and what I mean by that is bringing in an extra player that takes you from 90 wins to 92 wins, from 91 to 93, from 93, you know, each next win means more and more to you because that could be the win that brings you the AL Central. And we saw how important that was for the White Sox in 2021. Clinching the playoff and sliding back for about 10 days or so, really kind of scuffling to find themselves after being assured a playoff footing and then having to get things up and going again against the A's in a three-game set. Shoot, they could have had the one seed. And I think there's a lot to be said for a guy like Lucas Giolito saying, we understood what we kind of let go of last year. We understand what it's going to take to change that. How we do have to, in his words, kind of step on throats. Or as Tim Anderson has put it over the last week, kill teams early. Make sure they're down. Continue to press the gas pedal. I appreciate that kind of conversation because, and I think you hear this in the NBA more often, but teams, even good teams, when they're starting things out, need to learn how to win games. It's not a perfect analogy from one sport to the next, but there's something like that that happens in baseball. And to be completely honest with you, even though the White Sox have been really great in nailing down leads, you know, Alex Colomé over the last couple of years has been very good. Shoot, you hand a lead to this White Sox bullpen over the last two seasons, 19 and 20, they have been pretty good relative to the league in salting that lead away. But adding a guy like Liam Hendricks, having a bullpen the way they do, you know, bringing in a starter like Lance Lynn allows you to, you know, seize those leads more often and then lock them down. Make sure that a team doesn't have space to get back up on you, as it were, and you can put them away with the offense you've already got on hand. We got a lot to get to yet here on White Sox Weekly. As I mentioned, GM Rick Hahn was on with Waddle and Sylvie Thursday afternoon. You'll hear a little bit of that when we come back at 9:30. James Fegan of The Athletic will be our guest here on White Sox Weekly. We'll definitely get into the big questions on the roster pieces that the White Sox will have to make decisions about over the next couple of weeks. That's things like, how does Michael Kopech fit into the roster from here on out? Where does Garrett Crochet begin the season? For that matter, what about the young Andrew Vaughn? Is that a guy that's going to be a big part of the lineup to begin the year? Or is he going to need some ramp up as well? We'll get to those. We'll get to more. You've got White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight. This is ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
On the new home of the White Sox.
ESPN 1000. Welcome to White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports is the new home of the White Sox.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000. I'm Connor McKnight. Happy Saturday morning to you. We're just a couple of minutes away from a conversation with White Sox beat reporter James Fegan. However, on Thursday, White Sox general manager Rick Hahn was the guest of Waddle and Sylvie, the afternoon show here on ESPN 1000. Thought I'd bring you some of the conversation that the guys had with White Sox GM Rick Hahn. Kind of a fun thing. There's a little background you need to know here. Or perhaps you know already if you're as big a Yoan Moncada fan as Rick Hahn is. Now, you figure, obviously, Rick Hahn is a big fan of Yoan Moncada. Of course he is. He wanted him back in the Chris Sale trade. He's a big part of the offense. Why wouldn't Rick Hahn be a fan of Yoán Moncada. There's a different facet to Yoán Moncada fandom now, though. Not just for Rick Hahn, but for White Sox fans, for me, for Len, for DJ. This matters now because Yoán has released a music video for a new single of his, Desastre Personal. It's on his YouTube page. We'll tweet the link. Actually, you've probably already seen the link tweeted. We'll tweet the link again just in case you've missed it. And the boys, Waddle and Sylvie, began the interview with some of the music from some music from the music video so that Rick Hahn could kind of comment. I thought there's no better place to pick up their interview with White Sox general manager Rick Hahn. The music you're about to hear is from Yoán Moncada. This is Desastre Personal.
¿Cómo disimular? Que me vuelvo loco si no te tengo.
That's a Renaissance man right there.
Right there.
Play baseball
Desastre
at a high level.
Personal is the name of the song. And there's a video that goes along with it. And of course, as we always do, we always put our guests right on the spot at the beginning of a relationship.
Sure.
And Rick Hahn, how would you grade Yoán Moncada's singing ability and music video ability?
I got to tell you guys, that's my jam right there. I mean, that is my jam. It's going to be my ringtone. And hopefully that's our MVP third baseman or MVP candidate third baseman. But it's good to see that he's, I guess we would now call him a six-tool player based on that ability that he showed there in that music video.
Rick, do you also shop where Moncada shops for one of those fantastic rompers I think he was wearing for
yeah,
you?
Yeah, there's been a lot of times over the last few years when we've been on the road and, you know, our wardrobes have gotten mixed up, as you can obviously see. You know, you may see him occasionally in a quarter zip with a Sox logo on it and then me wearing the man romper. On the road, it happens.
That's awesome.
Rick, some of the guys mentioned, I think Tim Anderson said it, I think Lucas Giolito also mentioned that last year they were very happy with what happened, but they felt when you got towards the end of the season and into the postseason that maybe there was a lack of that killer mentality, the killer instinct. Do you share that same evaluation of what you saw last year?
You know, I obviously saw Lucas's and TA's comments along those lines, and I get what they're talking about. I mean, obviously, we were the first team in the league to clinch a playoff spot, sitting there in the one seed. And then over the course of the next 2 weeks, you know, the remaining regular season and then in the postseason, we just weren't quite clicking as the same team. And I don't know if that was, you know, as they put it, due to a lack of killer instinct or perhaps more along the lines of an exhaling once you sort of accomplished an important goal, and then it was, for whatever reason, they had trouble refocusing going forward. Again, that experience, that taste of the postseason is a positive, and one of the positives that comes from it, one of the many positives that come from it, is realizing sort of that level of intensity that needs to continue, not just once you meet that first mile marker, but enough to maintain it all the way through the finish line.
Back to Moncada for a second. You know, there's a lot of guys who struggled last year. Do you believe Moncada's year is an outlier based on everything he went through?
Absolutely. Look, it was a brutal and at times perhaps frightening eye-opener what he experienced last year in terms of his COVID diagnosis, and then more importantly, the toll it took on his body. I mean, here's a 25-year-old peak athlete who, you know, obviously is coming off a great year in 19 and the trajectory is on the up and up. And he was just gassed. I mean, you saw publicly late in the season, we had a game in Cleveland where he went from first to home. And, you know, by the time he got to the dugout, like the training staff and coaching staff had to like surround him because he couldn't catch his breath. We weren't sure he was going to be able to physically take the field the next half inning. There were also times that weren't public, you know, over the course of the season, he'd go out for some pregame work and, you know, Super Joe McEwen would hit him some ground balls and 8 to 10 ground balls in, and he's just gassed. And so you saw the physical toll that this disease can take upon people, much less, you know, someone at the peak of their athletic ability. It was frightening. That said, the good news is, knock on wood, as evidenced by that kicking music video, he is back to feeling himself. He feels great. He's strong. He's gone through numerous workouts, and this should all be behind him now.
One of the other big stories of pitchers and catchers reporting, Rick, is Michael Kopech being back with the team and being healthy. You've alluded to some sort of a special role to get him going all the way through October. Are you alluding that he could start the year in the bullpen?
That's certainly a possibility, Sylvie. Here's the thing. We we've discussed this with Michael, and you know, we can certainly make it clear that long term, we view him still as a potential premium starter. We think he's part of a very good rotation for a long time. But we have to be aware of two things. One, you know, for the last 2 years, he hasn't faced any hitters. So we're not building up off of a very solid innings base right now. It'd be foolhardy to think, okay, we're going to give this guy the ball every fifth day, and he's going to be strong late in the season. You know, eventually he's going to run out of gas. The second element is that we obviously have pretty lofty expectations around here. We hope to be playing and winning ball games deep into October, and we want to make sure that Michael Kopech is healthy and productive and part of that.
What's the plan for Crochet as camp begins?
You know what? Not entirely different from what I just described for Michael, in that, you know, long term, he still very much has the potential to be part of a premium rotation. That said, limited pro experience, limited innings base because of the year we all suffered through last year, and someone that we want strong and productive deep into the season and through October. So I think certainly in Crochet's spot, you know, we've talked publicly about the fact that he's likely part of this bullpen.
Rick Hahn joining us. It's Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. We had Liam Hendricks on the day that he signed and it was official. We were so impressed. Obviously, he's a great pitcher and he's established himself here in the last couple of years. We were really impressed with the intangibles of him sounding selfless. Was that one of the draws, too, with such a young team, having a guy like that in the bullpen with all those young guys?
His makeup's outstanding. I mean, you hit on it. The work ethic, the thirst for knowledge, the dissatisfaction with what he's already accomplished and desire to continue to do more. I mean, he's going to fit in great, not just between the lines, but also, you know, for the reasons you alluded to and what I just laid out in terms of his presence with this young team. I think he was available to the media, I think, an hour or so ago, and one of the things I believe he said was something like, "I need to earn this closer's job." And, yeah, you know, obviously the expectations is he'll probably earn it. But that's the mentality he comes into. And again, not too dissimilar from Tony. He's here to earn the trust and respect of those around him. And you like guys that, you know, certainly aren't complacent with what they've accomplished.
Rick, someone like you who's done the job for so long, you're always thinking about what's next. Does anything about this team going into the season keep you up at night?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's a bad way to live my life. But, you know, you're always it's part of the gig. You always worry about what could go wrong. And yeah, I think that probably all 30 GMs, if you asked them what's their biggest fear, it's health. I mean, you just want to get through these 6 weeks down here, putting aside the whole pandemic element. You just want to get through these 6 weeks here with everyone healthy and intact. And, you know, not too dissimilar from probably the other 29 clubs. If we had an area where we'd want to add, it would be in from a pitching standpoint. You know, we're entering a year where, obviously, coming off a 60-game season, guys are going to be asked to ramp back up to levels that they haven't been at in over a year. And you want to make sure you have enough alternatives around to try to get us through those essentially 1,400 or so innings that we're going to need this season, during the regular season alone, at least.
That's White Sox general manager Rick Hahn on with Waddle and Sylvie Thursday afternoon. Some fun stuff with the Yoan Moncada video. I assume that Desastre Personal has to be Yoan Moncada's walk-up music for 2021. I suppose we'll have to see. Maybe there's another track on the album that he'll actually want to walk up to. You may have noticed that while the boys asked him about Gerrit Crochet and Michael Kopech and some other roster issues, they did not touch on Andrew Vaughn. That's all right, because I'll talk a little bit about that and the other issues surrounding the White Sox as they have pitchers and catchers reporting this week with James Fegan of The Athletic. He is our guest here on White Sox Weekly. He is up next. Stay tuned. I'm Connor McKnight. This is ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly on Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000. This is White Sox Weekly.
If you miss something, podcasts are available on the new ESPN Chicago app.
White Sox Weekly, ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000. I'm Connor McKnight. We are joined by White Sox beat reporter James Fegan of The Athletic. He is our guest, and he speaks with us now. Hi, James. How you doing, man? Great to talk with you.
Hey, Connor. Great to be in sunny Chicago with all my baseball friends. Having a great time.
Is there anywhere you'd rather be, James? The snow. There's the snow. It's wonderful.
There's plenty of places I'd rather be, but unfortunately, literally every step out of my apartment is a carefully considered risk to my safety.
Well, let's start there, James. You are going to cover this season. You will cover this spring. You'll travel some. What are the ways an intrepid reporter like yourself going to do differently, want to change up some? Like, where can the process of being a Major League Baseball reporter get better for you?
I would say that it used to be when I was, like, asking an interview subject, hey, I have to turn on my recording app, I would ask, like, give me 30 seconds. Now, sometimes I'll be like, give me 10 seconds because I got this down. It's a quick process. And then the app failed, and it took like 25 seconds with Yasmani Grandal today. But that's neither here nor there. It's a more streamlined process.
When you look at the White Sox, Rick Hahn, actually, we just listened to a little bit of Rick Hahn on the show, and he spoke with Waddle and Sylvie yesterday. He was asked by, I think Sylvie asked him, what keeps him up at night about the 2021 roster? If you were asked the same question from Hahn's perspective, are there any things off the top of your head that would keep you up at night about how this team could break camp in 2021?
I mean, I think he mentioned pitching because that's what he always said. Not to diminish the individual concerns about pitching depth on this organization. But, you know, you're in a situation where you got this great top three of the rotation. You've got a very strong bullpen, at least like from what you could think it would be, you know, the starting eight that you start the season with. And then, you know, you have the Dylan Cease, Ronaldo Lopez, Carlos Rodon bucket. You certainly have more reasons to be optimistic about Cease, maybe given the adjustments he's made. But you have this unproven group. And, you know, you have a couple options to kind of flip through, you know, Jimmy Lambert and Jonathan Seaver debuted last year. But you have a lot of things where it's, like, uncertain. It's a lot about breaking right. I would think that's your concern as far as, like, what do you do when things go wrong, or what do you do if, you know, Dallas Keuchel's back acts up and you need, you know, like, a spot starts for 2 weeks. You know, stuff like that. I think it becomes especially acute in the age of COVID where, you know, a positive case or resulting contact tracing or just reshuffling of schedules, especially now you're trying to play all 162 like normal, like it's not in the middle of a pandemic, where the depth issues can kind of pop up quicker and hit harder and, you know, persist for a week or two longer than, you know, anything you've really kind of accounted for before. It seems like a situation where normally we'd assess this roster and say, like, you know, it's a little bit of a depth issue with pitching, but we'll see how they can navigate through it. There's certainly some upside. I feel like depth is going to be, like, they went from a surplus to, you know, spot starting Drew Anderson last season in a 60-game schedule so much quicker than we could have anticipated. Obviously, things are trending positively, but why, we don't necessarily know that this is not going to be just, you know, twice as grueling depth-wise for pitching for a normal season just because of the environment that everyone's pitching in.
Talking with James Fegan, White Sox beat reporter of The Athletic here on White Sox Weekly. You know, I'm with you. Depth is obviously a huge thing across Major League Baseball. And I know each and every GM, as they open up, are going to get asked questions about how creative, quote-unquote creative, they can be with their pitching in a 162-game season. Now, whether that alludes to the opener, to piggyback starts, to guys getting some starts and also mixing in from multi-inning relief appearances or something, I think it's a fair question to ask every GM in baseball, but I don't know that creativity by itself gets the White Sox, creativity as it's defined in that question, gets the White Sox through their Garrett Crochet, Michael Kopech, all those sorts of different, Carlos Rodon even to a certain extent, those different injury/usage innings issues they may have. come September.
I mean, ultimately, you want a staff that makes you very uncreative. You'd rather not be the Rays. You'd rather be the team that's throwing out, you know, Randy Johnson and Curt Schilling for nine innings to close out a World Series. You want that type of situation. And it doesn't seem like Crochet necessarily, I mean, if you take away the fact that what his long-term goal is, it sounds like for this year, Crochet is just a reliever in your bullpen from opening day. Like, he's just another Aaron Bummer. Aaron Bummer is really good and really valuable and, you know, really made that 2019 team look a lot better than they were with, you know, being a, you know, a multi-inning guy, and it seems like Crochet can be another guy in that group, but it's not going to be somebody you can willy-nilly kind of flash between the rotation and whatnot. And the fact that Kopech could be in this kind of hybrid role, yeah, it's nice, but I think, like, the ideal situation, obviously, with Kopech would be if he could start regularly and be, like, an upgrade in that rotation, and that's where he'd have the most impact. It doesn't sound like there is the, you know, I think the phrase that Hans says a lot is innings-based for them to really feel comfortable doing that, and thus you're going to be mixing around, and, you know, maybe, you know, the whole even 120, 140 innings isn't as realistic as it might have been in spring training of 2020. I think you're more looking for these really foundational pieces to kind of click in and give you very normal innings. Like, if Dylan Cease is a very consistent six innings per start, 32-start guy, that really does a lot more for you than being creative. If, you know, Carlos Rodon has this healthy year that we've been waiting on, you know, for four seasons now, that's really what opens things up for you, not being super creative with Kopech or Jamie Lambert. That's nice, but that's not really what's going to make everything click very easily.
Is the backup catching job an open competition from how you understand things? Is there room to, you know, injuries aside, the way you could best put it together, COVID aside, the way you could probably best put it together, is there room for a third catcher on this roster as the White Sox break camp?
Certainly initially. Certainly if, you know, if Andrew Vaughn's not, you know, the opening day guy, you almost have to have Mercedes or Collins to give you something offensively in that slot. And I think, you know, with the Lurie Garcia has always been this guy who basically counts for two backups, an outfield and infield, that gives you a bit more ability to carry an extra bat. It seems like they've been pretty dead set on 13 pitchers, even though I don't think there's a specific limit on that. So, yeah, there's potential for that, but that's really, especially once Vaughn is up, that becomes an extremely limited role for someone like Collins, who you know, for 5 years now, I've been trying to talk about his long-term future and tapping into his ceiling. And I don't know if kind of really occasional at bat is what he's looking for. It certainly wasn't what he wanted last season. He talked about how he was better off in AAA, and it's certainly not what he's gunning for this season, where he's trying to win that backup job. I don't think they bring in Luke Roy at all, or especially not Luke Roy picks the White Sox over three other offers he had, if he didn't feel like that backup job was wide open. And I certainly think that's the direction they could go in. I think, you know, there's a range of possibilities there, but I would think it's between LaCroix and Collins.
We've heard a lot about Andrew Vaughn and the potential of him maybe even breaking camp with the team, maybe being at the end of the year the primary DH, and anything, you know, within that spectrum as well. As you kind of heard from your White Sox sources about the plan for Vaughn for 21, what sorts of guys did you feel like you should reach out to double check on something like this, to make sure that, like, okay, what do I need to know about a guy who just hasn't played that much professional baseball yet?
I mean, the rancor last year was that they were trying to call up Vaughn thinking about calling up Vaughn last season. So I think they're from a level of, we're already taking the cautious approach that we didn't just throw him in the middle of a playoff race then when we felt he was ready to do it. They've always been very much like, this is a guy on a rapid trek to the majors. This is a guy who already has a plate approach to survive. That this is a guy who got plenty of experience against top-end pitching. And he's basically anybody who was, you know, Dane Dunning was facing Andrew Vaughn for, you know, the last few weeks that he was in the alternate site. Anybody who got called up into the bullpen was facing Andrew Vaughn all the time. So they felt like he had top-level competition last season, in addition to being a guy that they did not expect to really hold back in Double A for like a full year or anything like that. So I always felt that it's a situation where they've marked him out since the end of last season as the guy. Like, we were asking about DH at the end of last season. You know, I asked Han, like, you know, in 2019, you didn't get a left fielder of any kind because everybody knew it was going to be Eloy. And 2020, you didn't get a center fielder of any kind because everybody knew it was going to be Luis Robert. Is Vaughn in that same conversation with DH? And he said, yes. Now, I think what played out with those guys is that they wanted to figure out service time and getting a year of control from them before they called them up. And I think it could be a very similar situation with Vaughn, just like it was with Nick Madrigal, who, you know, was called up, you know, a week into 2020 season, which is exactly when he needed for, you know, get extra year control. I think it could be a similar situation with Vaughn. I think it's notable that you get the, you know, he's very much in the mix for opening day talk, whereas with Garrett Crochet, it's, you know, yes, the plan is definitely, they're unambiguous when they talk about him being in the majors. So I definitely think I lean towards more him thinking he's going to get staggered a bit, but I don't think it's a question of they don't think he's ready or they're holding it back or they want more seasoning. I think they kind of made their decision when they didn't go out and get another DH to back him up because they thought he was ready.
James, this is also traditionally extension season for the White Sox, or at least coming up to it. Do you get the sense that there are conversations? I mean, they obviously have Lucas Giolito, who's prime candidate for a long-term contract, as difficult as that may be with a guy pitching as well as he has the last two seasons. Do you think that's in the works, being talked about? Are there complications there because of COVID?
I don't think that's necessarily going to – I don't think COVID or, you know, like this is stuff that's worked out through phone calls at this point. So I wouldn't think that's really worked out. But, yeah, it is certainly the time. And Giolito is somebody they've identified as being, you know, extension-worthy since after his breakout season. And, you know, I've heard that there's – you know, Giolito's always spoken both publicly and privately about how happy he is with the White Sox. And I think there's certainly an openness to a deal there, but I don't have anything that says, like, this is in the works or this is getting announced next week. And I think Giolito's someone who's in a position in his career with his both, not imminent, but, you know, he just got his first arbitration payment. He can kind of see the light at the end of the tunnel in spring training. You're not, like, negotiating with a guy who's pre-arbor or anything like that. Where he can kind of see free agency down the road and knows his earning potential. He's always had a keen idea of his earning potential back from, you know, his high school days where, you know, he kind of fought a lot to get a good deal getting drafted out of Harvard Westlake, where I don't think it's going to be, you know, this really easy sign or this really below market deal or anything like that. So I think that's probably the obstacle, is that you're dealing with a, you know, a savvy operator who knows what he's worth. But I think it's certainly potentially they have two interested parties, but I don't think it's necessarily as simple as you know, getting a guy who wants to be in the majors right away and agreeing to a deal. So it could happen. I don't really have anything to say that it's immediately going to happen.
Spending a couple minutes with James Feegan of The Athletic. He covers the White Sox. You got White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000. James, I wonder, you know, I don't think COVID's necessarily done messing with the marketplace of free agents. I think baseball's negotiations, you know, between the CBA, the players union, and the league about its CBA has something to do with negotiations with multiple players right now too. If you're in a spot, if the White Sox are in a spot rather where it's late, you know, you've got the opener coming up, and there have been marketplaces that have just cratered for some players, do you think there will be a willingness to add where there might not have been earlier? What would it take marketplace-wise for a team to change their plan some?
That would be really surprising. I mean, I think, you know, even as far as weeks ago, it was, you know, the word was that the White Sox were functionally done outside of minor league deals. And we're trying to find and chop out that level just for depth at this point. So I can't really see anything other than somebody being, you know, someone on that level or that tier being like, all right, well, I really want an opportunity to find a team where I could break camp with a club or make a spot or, you know, make the opening day roster. But clearly that's not materializing, I will take a minor league deal. I will go to AAA and hopefully tear it up and then earn a spot. I think maybe something like that. But I'm not of the notion that they're going to all of a sudden Jake Odorizzi is still sitting around in March and they're like, dang it, turns out there was $50 million under the couch cushions here. Bring them on down. So I think they're functionally done as far as the major structure of the roster up until the deadline, which is where they're reserving to when they'd make another move.
What sort of sense do you get from Yasmani Grandal, the kind of the center of the run prevention operation for the White Sox? Obviously, he's got to work with every pitcher. He's got a brand new pitching coach in Ethan Katz to work with, a brand new catching instructor in Jerry Nairn to work with, a position the White Sox haven't had on their coaching staff in a little while. Where's his head at? How is he operating, I guess, from a defensive standpoint as we open up spring?
He's very much dyed in the wool of that type of guy who, only begrudgingly acknowledges his offense and is all about, his pitchers, and it's all about, interfacing with Ethan Katz. And, I think he got asked today, like, given the ramp up from basically being half time as far as catching, he caught like 32, 33 games last year in his 60 game season to a full game spot where he's like the clear number one. And we asked him, like, how many games would he be up for? And he basically responded with, how many you got? So I think he's very much comfortable with that situation of being a number one. He's very much somebody who wants to have this like firm idea of scouting every pitcher on his staff and to have the idea of the arsenal. He's the guy who reached out to the proprietary game planning outfit Codified for maps on his staff, and he talked to today a little bit about how he's trying to blend that with his own approach of making in-game observations and reading swings and handling over it. So I think he's a guy who, I wouldn't call him a control freak, but I think he's very comfortable with that idea of he's this presence who is responsible for kind of, delegating everything and managing the whole staff. So I think he's chomping at the bit for this kind of opportunity to be seen as this leader and this overlord of the pitching staff. I think that appeals to him a great deal because he said he's a similar mindset of Tony La Russa, and that's a really obsessive guy who wants to see every angle.
It'd be interesting to watch those minds meld over the season. James, really appreciate it, man. Great talking White Sox with you. We'll check in again soon.
All right. Thanks for having me.
That's White Sox beat reporter James Feegan. He was our guest here on White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight. When we come back, you'll hear from Liam Hendricks, and you'll hear from Yasmani Grandal. This is White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports is the new home of the White Sox.
This is White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000. A behind-the-scenes look at the White Sox as they prepare for the 2021 baseball season.
Hey, Chicago, the White Sox are back.
Welcome to White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
Closing things up here on White Sox Weekly, I'm Connor McKnight. This is ESPN 1000. Had a lot on the show already, and there's more for you. You're going to hear from Liam Hendricks in a minute. You'll also hear a quick one from Yasmani Grandal. I wanted to get you kind of the largesse of camp as we've begun with pitchers and catchers reporting. You heard Rick Hahn and his interview with Waddle and Sylvie a little earlier in the show. You heard Desastre Personal, Yoan Moncada's new single. Well, not the whole of it, but you can go find it, and we'll probably play the whole thing a little bit later. I'm pitching to Len that he and I should cover it. He and DJ and I should cover it, because DJ's got some pipes too, man. That guy can sing. I don't know if the next guy you're going to hear from can sing or not. He can do a lot of other stuff. Liam Hendricks was signed by the White Sox to be their closer, although he has mentioned a time or two that he's not the closer yet. He's just a reliever who has to earn the job. I got the sense that he will earn the job. And that's kind of talk that happens in the offseason. That kind of, let's go win. We haven't won anything yet. There is still a job to do kind of thing. You heard some of it from Tony La Russa earlier in the show. And that's all well and good. I expected some of that to kind of fade away. The guys kind of have roles as we started spring training, as we started pitchers and catchers reporting, and yes, even this soon. But that hasn't stopped Liam from talking about one particular point that I found really interesting when he first signed, something that he hasn't stopped talking about, and that's his willingness to go pitch and pitch often for this team. He joked around on ESPN 1000 a couple of weeks ago when he was signed that he wants to throw 80 innings, which is a lot for a reliever in this day and age. He spoke to reporters on Thursday and reiterated the fact that he's here to pitch as much as possible for the White Sox.
I want to pitch, and I've reiterated that to him a couple of times. Just like, look, I want the ball, whatever situation, whatever time it feels like. And if there's a string of games where we're winning by a lot or it's not a position where I'm able to pitch, I would like to make sure that I don't go more than 4 days without pitching. And then in that case, like, I can go back to back, and then we'll see how it goes. But no, I really haven't spoken too much about usage or anything like that because we haven't even had any spring training games yet. So that really hasn't come up. But no, I want the ball. I want to pitch as much as I possibly can. I want to try and do as well as I can for the team that if they need me in a certain situation, they need me. If they don't, they don't. And there's other guys out there that can handle the job as well.
You know, obviously there's a ton of value in having Liam Hendricks pitch as much as he seems to be willing to throw. The A's got a ton of value out of Liam Hendricks being more than just a three-out guy. Tony La Russa is a manager who has understood that breaking convention in bullpens has its advantages. And I wouldn't necessarily say that Liam Hendricks pitching as much as he did with the A's or as much as he wants to here in the cut you just heard is breaking convention. We've seen some relievers, not many, but some relievers kind of do that multi-inning role and provide great relief. Ooh, that's a terrible pun to their team in doing so, right? Especially when it gets to the playoffs and you condense the number of relievers you're using anyway. The circle of trust kind of shrinks some. The hope is that the White Sox have as many weapons throughout the season as they will in the playoffs. They'll be kind of a multi-headed monster and be able to get all sorts of outs in all sorts of different ways. But if Liam Hendricks is getting more of them, that means that you've got weapons like Hoyer and Foster and Crochet and maybe even Kopech, depending on how things shake out, to go and take down tough spots in rosters, to handle extra innings, to come in and provide a different look for three batters if need be. Those options make the White Sox versatile. Those options make the White Sox tough. And Liam Hendricks pitching the way he did for the A's last year will make the White Sox in 2021 a lot tougher as well. One more cut I'd like to play for you here before we end White Sox Weekly for the morning. Yasmani Grandal talked with reporters as well, and a simple question was posed to him. How are you getting along with your new manager, Tony La Russa? I thought the answer was interesting because it really did speak to the connective tissue that this game has, regardless of the age difference between a manager and a player. Here's Yasmani.
I feel like he kind of looks at the game almost the same way that I do, where I want to make sure that we cover everything from, you know, head to toe, no matter what, from the beginning to the end and afterwards in order to be successful. And I think that's why he's had the success that he's had in his managerial career.
Grandal went on to mention that just about every time he's been at the Camelback Ranch facilities at CBR, Tony La Russa has been there as well. It sounds like a lot of people are real devoted to making this 2021 season something that fans remember for a real long time. Here's hoping that's exactly the case, and we feel pretty lucky to be able to bring it to you here on ESPN 1000. To that end, you may want to write a couple of things down as we end the show this morning. Our spring training broadcasts are set. The dates are out. You should go follow at ESPN White Sox on Twitter to begin with. I've retweeted it as well, at C1 McKnight. Len's retweeted it. DJ's retweeted it. The White Sox retweeted it. It's all out there. But our first broadcast of spring will be February 28th versus the Brewers. It's a 2:05 start. We've got the March 2nd game versus the Rangers. We've got March 7th versus the Rockies. The 8th against the Dodgers. We've got that March 15th date against the Cubs. We'll get March 17 against the Dodgers and a handful more before we get out of there, too. We're also going to broadcast the final game of the year, March 28th, against the Diamondbacks, or final spring training game, I should say. And I don't want to give away too much right now, But we are planning something fairly fun for the March 28th broadcast against the Diamondbacks. It's a thing that some stations have tried that I think is pretty cool about spring training broadcasts. It's a tease for you. All I'm saying is the March 28th game against the Diamondbacks, we will absolutely have something fun for you here on ESPN 1000. Hope you enjoyed White Sox Weekly this morning. Thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks to our guest, James Feegan. Thanks to Waddle and Sylvie for allowing us to play part of the interview with Rick Hahn. Truly appreciate it. We will be back next week for more White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight. This is ESPN 1000.
You've been listening to White Sox Weekly, brought to you by Wintrust Bank, Mazda of Orland Park. If you missed something, podcasts are available on the new ESPN Chicago app.
White Sox Weekly.
Saturday mornings at 9 on Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Chicago's new home of the White Sox.